The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 237 for Friday, 23rd July, 2010. My name is Jim Race here in California, and as well here in California, and shortly to be in the exact same place very soon, is Jules Cisek.
Hey Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's going to be a bit of a rush show, which is almost undeserved if you think about it, because we had Sachsenring last weekend. But before we get into that, I do want to mention to those folks that have donated, and thank you so very much. I have yet to get the stickers out, and I promise that will happen as soon as I return from the Laguna Seca MotoGPOD. Oops. Laguna Seca MotoGP race, because you guys deserve them, and I will have some with me, and we're going to try and have a meetup, aren't we, Jules?
Yes, we are. We're going to do a meetup on Saturday at Laguna Seca, obviously on Saturday at noon, on the road behind Turn 4 Grandstands, which is right next to the Scramp office there up on the road. We're not going to do it at the Timing Tower, because last time there was a sewer truck that was dumping all the porta potties just as we were starting to meet. That was unpleasant.
And both Jules and I realized that neither of us has a MotoGPOD shirt handy. So
it's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, it is kind of sad. But I just moved. I can't find mine, and I can't find a multitude of other things. But we'll keep an eye out, and we'll be looking for people, looking for other people. So noon on Saturday, set your watches, folks.
Cool.
And I'll have stickers there as well. So, very cool. We had a bunch of listener emails this week, as usual, and thanks so much for sending stuff in. Martin did kind of tag on to one, and I didn't read it. Did you catch the whole gist of that one, Jules, with Gabor?
Yeah. So basically, Gabor Tamashii apparently has something in his contract about a certain amount of points by a certain amount of time in the championship, a certain point in the championship, and he didn't get that. So he is losing. It looks like he's going to lose his MOL sponsorship, the Hungarian oil company that's been sponsoring him. This is the same sponsor that basically got him the MotoGP ride last year, if you remember, that took Takahashi away because he brought in the money. Now he's about to lose the money, which is really, I think it's really unfair that it happened after this particular round, because he and Iannone basically just got screwed by a bad setup.
Sure.
They were both excellent. They were both excellent throughout the entire weekend. They were both excellent in the first part of the race, and then they both faded, and he faded a lot, Tamashii.
It was really odd in Moto 2 for a while to see a pair of basically Kawi green bikes up at the front, wasn't it?
Yes, it was really weird, wasn't it? I like the Kawi green. I didn't even think about that, but.
Yeah. Maybe a stick in the eye to the people that provide the engines. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if between now and when they return, which is what at Brno, right?
Yes.
That he doesn't pick something else up. He's a pretty savvy guy and a pretty savvy guy at marketing.
He's a very savvy guy. He's a very savvy manager. And he's very, very, very popular in Hungary despite all this. I mean, he's one of the most popular sports figures over there, so... Yeah, I don't think this is the end of Gabor Tamashii, but it is kind of sucky for him.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drag. You want to launch into the races?
Sure. Let's do them in order. We'll do 125s.
Okay.
125s was incredibly edge of the seat fight between Espargaro and Marquez.
But we really should talk about the beginning. With the wet dry and all the chaos and guessing that was happening there, even though you knew
true. Go ahead.
The inevitable was going to happen with the two German boys jumped out to a huge lead, both running full wets.
Right.
But the track was drying. There was a dry line occurring, except for like down in 13 and 14. But you kind of knew it was going to happen. They had a stiff wind going, and there was a whole bunch of speculation on the grid And is in the end, essentially all the fast guys, the normally fast guys, switch to slicks. But it was actually kind of fun to watch that pre-race, you know, stuff going on.
Pre-race, yeah. So it was Folger and...
Krumenacker.
Oh, yeah, Krumenacker. Krumenacker was on wets?
Yeah.
I thought it was Schroeder. No, it was Stu. It was Schroeder and Folger.
Okay.
Yeah, because they ended up getting lapped. Krumenacker wasn't that... Oh, yeah, he was pretty far off, too.
Yeah.
No, because it was two Germans, I thought. I thought it was Schroeder and Folger.
You could very well be right. And frankly, it was a bit of a dizzying weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah. Except for the Jaguar camera. Anyway, but Marquez and...
Nice pun.
Yeah. That was pretty bad, actually. Marquez and Espargaró really put on an unbelievable show. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the Laguna Seca Stoner Rossi battle because they were just so far ahead of everybody else. I think they were at one point like 20 seconds ahead of the field, just fighting it out, swapping the lead, and of course eventually Espargaró crashed, just barely touching the is that AstroTurf, by the way?
It is, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so he just went past the white line in turn 13, right?
Yep, turn 13.
At the bottom of the hill, which is, you know, where you're going pretty fast, and he touched the green there, and then Marquez just cruised to fifth victory in a row.
After five poles.
After five, yeah, that's right. And he's basically, no way, so really? He has five poles?
Five poles, five victories, yep.
Wow. He's got a bunch of records now. He's got, I think, the most wins in a row by a 125 racer since Valentino Rossi. Actually, beating Valentino Rossi, who was holding that record for, I guess, 14 years now, or 13 years. And then he's also the youngest, I think, who's had this many wins or something. Oh, no, he was the youngest 125 winner. That's right.
Yeah, the first time. You know, Repsol put out a press release that was incredibly optimistic for this weekend. covering all of their riders, and it was pretty amusing, and we'll have to see if their portent comes to play. But you know, there's no doubt that there is, at least on the GP side, a halfway decent spot for Pedrosa should he do what he does before. But let's continue on. So yeah, good on Marquez, and a great battle in 125s.
It's really a shame that Espargaró fell off, because even if he had lost the race, and it looked like he was actually starting to get a handle on how to beat Marquez. Mm-hmm. In all the places that Marquez was very strong, Espargaró was actually able to keep in front of him, but for those last two laps. But of course he crashed, so that's, he got no points. Now Marquez has really got a strong lead. Of course, it's just what, 24 points.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, it's not insurmountable. Obviously,
it's a race, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Could be.
Indeed.
The way those two guys are going, I think it's going to be swaps between the rest of the two of them for the rest of the season. I mean, they really are ahead of the rest of the game.
It is interesting to see two protagonists that are that strong at the front, and part, you know. You kind of wonder how much development might be slowing down at this point and where resources are actually going.
Because of the possible change in rules, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's going to start at some point, and there's no reason that it might not be starting now.
Good point. I mean, again, that's kind of what happened to Honda in 250s, too. They knew that the end was coming. And
yeah. You know. Yeah, no doubt.
All right. And then we did the Moto2 race, which... was interesting in different ways.
Isn't it always?
Yeah. And really, I mean, what can we say about that race? Of course, people crashed in the first corner. It wasn't quite as many as we expected. I think only five riders went down.
Yeah, five or six. But the thing about it was, it actually happened further back in the pack, and it actually happened mid-pack. And one of the things we were really fearing at the ring was that it would happen up near the front and on the inside and take out, you know, half the pack.
Right.
It did take out some good guys, and it took out some people that were really having a go at it, especially in qualifying. Qualifying for Moto2 was actually really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's true. It was good. A lot of the guys actually got back on the track. I think Takahashi is the only one who did not.
I believe that's correct. Yeah. In fact, it was kind of interesting because DeRosa, as the race went on, you'll remember, latched on. He got lapped and latched onto the front group.
That's right.
And
that's
kept pace with him for a while until, you know, other people started showing up, and then he very coolly and wisely backed out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was a great race, and it was, you know, you saw Iannone and Tomashi take off and establish a very early big lead. And Elias had, you know, he got bumped on the start and got knocked back to, what, 10th or 11th, something like that?
Yeah.
And he basically made a tire switch just prior to the race, and it took him, you know, a few laps to get up to speed, but once he did, his charge through, which was extremely methodical, wasn't it?
It was the kind of you really have to be an experienced racer to be able to just go, you know, not see the guy in front of you and be chasing him anyway.
Exactly.
And you know, and that's what he did. Like, a lot of these guys are very hot-headed. They'll either, you know, win or bin it, and you know, they can chase the guy if they can see him at the corner. But he was just basically looking at his board, saying, "Okay, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this."
I really do have to respect and admire his consistency this year. He's had years in the past in the Premier Series where he's been a little bit up and down, but he's been really, really solid this year. And
yeah,
I'm impressed, yeah, both in demeanor and in performance.
He's got a lot on his shoulders too, because he really is kind of he was tipped to be the Moto2 champion before the championship even started. Like, it was like, you know, this is his series to lose before it even started. So that's a lot of pressure to carry. And, you know, he's leading the championship by 46 points, I think, now.
Yep. But you know, there's no doubt that as the season has went on, we still got a bunch of races. Well, we've still got a bunch of races to go that Iannone is picking up steam. Not necessarily out of his ears. He was calm this weekend, or relatively calm, I thought. You were kind of worried.
I was. I think he may have been actually worried. Maybe he was just very, you know, he's probably recognizing that he's not going to win races by doing stupid things. So
yeah, very true. Very.
And the thing is, I'm sure he and his team are very aware of just how strong he has been, and he's been very unlucky too. I mean, you know, he should have had two victories now, instead of a non-finish. Or, well, not a non-finish. He actually did pretty well, considering the ride through, and at Catalunya, and then you know, he should have had a first place. Who knows what happened? Obviously, the setup was screwed up on both the bikes. They just did not last because the whole field was faster than they were.
Who was the big surprise of Moto 2, at least at the end?
Rolfo.
Robbie.
Which is awesome because, I mean, you know, he's been in MotoGP. He's been in 250s, 125s forever.
World Superbike?
World Superbikes, of course, duh.
Mm-hmm.
10 years, 11 years that he's been around?
His last win was it Saxon? His first win, I think, was at Sachsenring in, what, 2004? Or maybe his last win. And he comes back and does it again. So good on him. It was nice to see him up there. Certainly.
Oh, wait. There was a bigger surprise. I forgot.
Which one was that?
Cudlin.
Oh, Damo Cudlin. Yeah. The one-off ride, maybe. From down under, he's been all over the place this year. He's raced in AMA. He's raced in BSB. I think British Supersport as well. Manages to snag a ride with Pons Kalex this weekend and storms to something like 13th in first practice. Forget what he got in qualifying, but a fantastic run. And he was in that battle for basically the podium up until a couple of laps to go.
Yep. And he even got, he almost caught Tomasi, so he could have had that sixth place.
Yeah. Very, very impressive. And there's no doubt that people are going to be seeing that and you know, he basically stated exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to make his presence known and show off what he could do, because he's had a bit of an up and down career. And so very cool to see somebody actually do what they said they were going to do. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Yeah, just come in and kick ass, and now it's up to people to recognize his accomplishment. I mean, the size of what he pulled off is just really, really impressive. That it just doesn't happen. Maybe it does. It reminds me a little bit of when Westy went to Yamaha on the World Supersport ride to replace, I think it was Brock Parks a few years back. Won 2 of 3 races there, and then got picked up by Kawi, MotoGP.
Right.
You know, it's the same type of performance.
You know what he was qualified, where he was on the grid?
I want to say he was 6th, but I think that might be wrong.
22nd.
That's
a hell of a ride.
Right. Well, we had a lot of people that were going back to front this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely so. But yeah, good on him. Moto2 was a lot of fun to watch. They started the race with just a little bit of dampness on the track, but essentially they were all treating it as a dry track.
Right.
And, you know, they had everybody that were on slicks, they had their tires up to temperature, so not an issue. But that was fun. I really enjoyed the Moto2 race. I held my breath in turn one. It wasn't as bad as I thought, so that was kind of cool.
Yep, same here.
Let's talk about MotoGP QP for a little bit before we dive into the race.
Sure.
There's a little bit of interesting stuff going on there. You want to fill us in?
Well, the first thing that was that Valentino Rossi showed up and was, I think, 3rd in practice one, mm-hmm. which is pretty damn impressive. But of course, you know, and Danny, who's always good. The aliens have done really well at this racetrack. I believe they've all won. Oh no, sorry.
Everybody.
Jorge has never won here. That's right.
He has never won here, and still
he was second by a tenth of a second last year. But
sure.
Yeah, he's never won, and he still hasn't won. it was Danny, Casey, of course, fantastic, and then we got to qualifying and. Well, I don't know. Which part of it do you want to talk about? The Randy Depunier, Vince Spies, and Jorge's fireball thing? Or
I think we should start with that, because that kind of set the stage a little bit for the rest of the weekend in a way.
Okay.
So
Jorge was just, you know, puttering down the straight at top, you know, neck-breaking speed. puttering around the track, setting fast laps. And... his engine exploded out of this. I mean, it was like flames out the sides, and you know, smoke and all that good stuff.
Oil gushing out the side.
It was funny. I actually watched qualifying on my phone.
Oh man!
Because I was just really exhausted, and I didn't feel like getting out of bed and turning on the computer, so I just was using my phone. And even on my phone, there's a little tiny screen, I could see the oil gushing out of the side of the engine. I was like, Jesus. That's bad. That looks bad. Thank God there's nobody behind him.
Yeah.
But the problem with the track there is that you go up a hill, and then you're hitting the straight, you know, where the oil started, basically.
Pretty much. And he basically blew at start-finish, and it looked like the oil started coming out in a serious amount, probably about 50 to 75 yards later, right on the – almost right on the normal turn-in point for turn one. And he was – as soon as he knew, he got as offline as he could, and pretty much, you know, while roasting his giblets, and managed to pull the bike off track. But in the meantime, here come Ben Spies and Randy Depunier behind. The first thought that I had after seeing the aftermath of that was, you know, if you saw this big cloud of smoke, you probably chill out a little bit. And the marshals certainly did a great job in getting the thing shut down from a red flag point of view, but... they just didn't have enough warning. And Spies went off first, crashed in the gravel in the turn one gravel trap, and was followed shortly thereafter by Randy Depunier, who likely might have had a relatively small slide off. I'm assuming they were probably both low sides, except for he impacted Spies' bike in a prone high-speed position. and managed to mess up his left ankle, which is a beginning of a story unto itself over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. But Lorenzo was definitely on fire, and
Well, you know what's interesting, Jules, is when I didn't watch that live, and so I fired it up later, and I noticed that it was an hour and 37 minutes long, and I kind of settled down. I'm like, they never take that long for a QP.
Right.
Something must have happened, and I hadn't been spoiled at that point. And so I got real comfortable and just kind of sat there and waited because I knew something was going to happen. And to be honest, the exact same thing happened with the race. I didn't get spoiled with that, but I saw that it went way long. And I'm like, okay, it's like round two. But as it turned out, Depunier did not run anymore in QP that afternoon. They did take him to – it was actually kind of interesting. Cecchinello actually took him from the medics and took him back to the garage. And he certainly looked in a bunch of pain, went out to Clinica Mobile, got an X-ray. And he did not have anything broken and said that they were going to run him in, warm up the next morning, which they did.
He had a cut, I guess, right?
He had a cut, but he also had like probably what amounts to a major sprain, if you think about it. And Ben Spies basically completely, his number one bike was quite mangled, and I don't think they had everything they needed there to actually bring that one back to full spec for Sunday. So what else?
Also, he went out on two. I didn't know that.
I believe he went out on his B bike. What else happened in QP?
Well, let's see. So we had a surprise. Hector Barber had his best. Best qualifying of the year.
Indeed.
He was in sixth. That was quite good. He's always really good at Sachsenring, though. So it's this is one of those tracks where I don't think the bike matters as much as the riders.
Yeah. You know? Right. And I think right now we're in for a whole bunch of surprises, given an awful lot of variables too.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. We had Alex De Angelis out on the Intuit, and he did not do so well, unfortunately.
No,
because you know this is one of those tracks where you know the tenths really matter because it's a very very short track, and I guess the top 10 was almost covered by a second. It was like 1.1 seconds.
On the other hand, he didn't do badly, as in
like crashing or
taking out
burning up an engine. Oh, yeah, taking out Nicky Hayden. You mean?
Indeed. Well, he tended to stay near the back of the pack, and that seemed to work out well for everybody except for him. But he did finish the QP and finish the race, so good on him.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay. That was kind of it for QP. But Sunday morning arose for GP, and...
Well, so let's see. I mean, Lorenzo did get the pole position. Okay. Stoner was second, Pedrosa third. Dovizioso was fourth.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rossi on the second row... joined with Barbara. Depunier did manage to get enough of a good time that he was seventh. Then Simicelli.
Even with, 27 minutes left to go in the session? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but he always goes out on, qualifying style laps pretty early. Like, remember, even back in the Kawasaki days, he was the first guy to throw on a qualifier.
Like on Friday morning.
Yeah, that's true, actually. It's true. Hey, it was a confidence builder. It worked for him. So Colin Edwards was down in like 12th, and Nicky Hayden 15th. Ouch. So the fortunes did change.
Indeed, they did.
All right. We had two races.
We did, but not by choice.
Not by choice, unfortunately.
When we started off with the grid that you just mentioned, we basically started off, and Pedrosa started off on lap one with a bit of a lead, not by much. The front pack was quite tight. Nicky Hayden also managed to get a good start, and Rossi ended up behind Hayden, if I remember correctly, right?
At one point, yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't take long, maybe less than a lap, before Lorenzo got around him. And
Lorenzo looked like he was running away and then settled in, and then Pedrosa started catching him again.
Started reeling him in again, and it was kind of clear at that point that we were going to have a good battle at the front. And Dovi was up there, and Rossi managed to pass both Nicky and I believe he was...
Simoncelli. He was, Simoncelli was ahead of him as well.
And he was chasing Debbie when we had a pretty major thing go on.
Yeah, we had red flags. We saw the red flags first, and there was a whole bunch of bikes down.
And definitely...
I think it was in turn four?
I believe it was in turn four.
Or as Ian Wheeler would say, it was turn nine. actually, Nick Harris says turn nine, and then Ian Wheeler explained how that works, and basically he showed a map of... I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it's brilliant. He had a map. This is the map that Nick Harris uses during commentating, and every corner was turn nine.
It was quite funny. But essentially happened was Randy Pugno had a really violent high side in the middle of the track in the transition, and it's kind of a blind entrance to that corner.
This is going to just start going up the hill, right?
Right, you start going up the hill, and there were a couple of guys that came through. I believe Bautista made it through, and Spies made it through, and then, but they unfortunately happened to be, or two gentlemen happened to be behind, which or three gentlemen.
Three, yeah.
Which was Callio, primarily Callio, Espargaro, and Bautista. Callio unfortunately clipped Randy Depunier's leg. I'm sure he was obviously trying to avoid it, caught a little error in the action, and it was very clear at that point that from a photograph that Depunier had a serious injury to his left leg. At the same time, both he and the bike are spinning in the middle of the track. First person to collect it was Aleix Espargaró. He went head over heels and ended up landing on his side and his back, pretty much immediately followed by Álvaro Bautista. And Bautista's bike looked pretty thrashed, so did Espargaro's. And in fact, Espargaro was kind of lying in the middle of the track for a while, and it was obvious that Depunier and they carred him off really quickly. And so it was immediately red flag. Depunier's bike was blazing away in flames, and it was certainly not what you'd ever want to see in a GP race, but it is what it was, and marshals got there pretty quick and got it taken care of, but it was obvious that we were going to have basically a race two. But a few things happened on the way to the grid.
Well, we should mention that Colin Edwards crashed about two laps from that incident, so he did not get to be in race two as a result.
Indeed. And that was a weird crash for Colin, too.
It was a very weird crash. Yeah, he just basically, like, kind of laid down.
He's not a very happy camper right now.
No.
Hopefully he will be happier come a couple of days from now. And I'm sure he will. He loves Laguna. So, and we understand that Yamaha is going to be getting them some parts and maybe a fresh engine, and certain that they want to have the Americans do well there. So looking forward to that. But a weird kind of thing happened, and a bit of a weird rule catch-out occurred. Both Bautista and Espargaró were able to make it back to their garages personally. However, their bikes were not able to make it within a five-minute period, and that rule is designed to basically prevent somebody that actually causes a crash from restarting a restarted race.
Right.
However, it caught them both out because the marshals were not able to get it back in time. They were paying attention to getting the track cleaned up. And even though both of them, but mostly Bautista, were able to continue on their second bikes, they were not allowed to continue. And Bautista took it to the point of...
actually riding out there, yeah. There was a guy saying, no, you can't go. And he was pleading with him.
Well, I think Paul Denning might have said, you know, give it a try. See if they let you past.
And he was pissed, actually, Paul Denning, when they interviewed him.
He literally said that. He goes, I'm pissed.
That's right. He did say that.
And I can understand. I can also at the same time understand that it's very, very difficult to, in the midst of a GP battle, to create flexibility on the fly in rules. It'd be nice if there was the ability to make an exception, but you know for a fact that they were trying to get this thing in because they're basically wed to a schedule for television across the world. And you notice how fast they got that thing restarted. It was quick.
Yeah.
It was quick, especially compared to QP, which is not being broadcast in as many areas nor to as many people. I mean, QP had, what, 40-minute, 35-minute delay, something like that?
I think so, yeah.
They had the race going in, like, 20 minutes max and, you know, providing all sorts of updates. So it was a drag. We ended up with, at that point, three guys or four guys out of the race because Depunier was off to Clinica Mobile and Da Costa to look and see what was going on there, and obviously not good.
Right, we found out basically that he has both broken both the lower bones in his left leg. It's not a compound fracture, I don't believe.
It's not.
But you know, it's not good.
Not good.
Not good. And it's such a shame because Randy has been having a fantastic year. I mean, he's been basically the top non-alien, really.
Indeed.
And it's really a shame. And, you know, it's amazing because he is targeting to come back in Bordeaux.
That's true. And I'm going to, when we're there this weekend for MotoGP, and he had a great picture. Remember that picture that he did? You know, have a nice vacation at Laguna Seca, guys. I'll see you at Bordeaux.
Right.
With his shirt off, of course. And I'll try and see if I can't get over Lucio this coming weekend for next week's show. And that might be interesting because before I get too far ahead of myself, but Roger Lee Hayden is going to be taking that spot for Team LCR. And I think that's a very sharp move from a marketing standpoint. And we all know Lucio Ceccanello is very, very good at appealing to and providing stuff for his sponsors. So
indeed,
that should be fun. Why don't you talk about the restart? I've been babbling away.
Well, so that obviously we didn't have. Let's see. So was Callio allowed to go? No, he was not allowed to go either. Wait, Callio. No, sorry. Callio did restart. He crashed
on the first corner, the first lap.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't have Depunier. We didn't have Bautista. We didn't have Alex Espargaro, and Colin Edwards was not even on the grid. Obviously, he wasn't going to be able to restart because he crashed in the previous. We had another good start from Pedrosa, Lorenzo, the aliens, basically Dovizioso, and Nicky Hayden, because the race was restarted in the order that the previous. Race was finished.
and with only 21 laps, mind you, which gave Rossi quite a bit of a rest.
That's right. That's right. Although he says it really didn't make that much of a difference because he was feeling fine. But, you know.
Of course he's going to say that.
Of course he's going to say that. So this time Nicky Hayden, you know, was starting from 6th instead of 15th. So that was quite a bonus there, and we had a runaway from Lorenzo. It looked like, and Danny Pedrosa caught him and passed him very aggressively. It was I think about 10 laps in, I think.
Yep. And
man.
Yeah, I mean that little mini battle that went on for a few laps until Danny put the hammer down was a hell of a battle, and you know.
And if you want to see a crazy. graph of that because we posted the graph from
Elliot
Brands and you can just see how interesting this race was because of all the lines that are crossing on this thing, you know.
Absolutely.
And Lorenzo and Dovizioso were definitely hammer and nail, but Pedrosa Lorenzo, sorry.
Yeah.
And he started, you know, pulling a lead, and I think Lorenzo at that point went into championship mode.
Yeah, no.
I'm not gonna chase and take any chances, you know.
And there was a pretty good battle going on a little bit further back. Actually there were two good battles going on. There was the one once.
Well, first it was Dovizioso.
Yeah. And once that was concluded, then we got well, – there were two other fights that were going on. We had the one going on farther back with Melandri, Hayden, and look at the
last – Astrum and Billy.
Okay, yes.
Shelley.
So, yeah, Seaman Shelley.
Yeah.
And then we had kind of a semi-epic battle that almost eclipsed a little bit what was going on at front, but there was a fair amount of gap. So this was the one that people kind of wanted to see, which was Rossi's attempted grab for the podium.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, he had that position. And I think Stoner outsmarted Rossi. It'd be very memorable because I remember this very similar thing happened in, I think it was 2003.
Yeah, I think it was.
Because I think Rossi was still on the, on the Honda. It was Sete Gibernau and Rossi, and Sete really, like, outsmarted him. Rossi looked like he was going to take the win. It's the same kind of thing, except that there was no touch, whereas Stoner apparently just barely touched Rossi, and Rossi was had to go wild.
Yeah.
Or crash.
It was actually really brilliant the way that he did not attack him in 13.
At the bottom of the hill.
When he was expecting it, and then saved that energy and momentum to get him in 14. And you know, I did notice something during the race. Whenever Casey would come up on his right-hand side, like passing him into one, Rossi was very adamant about pulling his leg back in and protecting it, which was certainly wise. And the last thing that he needed in this race, even though he rode really aggressively, was to crash. I mean, that would have been a nightmare. So to finish
right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the entire weekend he was saying, I just have to make sure I don't crash.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing that's worth also mentioning is when he was, you know, still swinging out his right leg on in the Rossi way, but it looked really, really awkward the way he's doing it. Obviously, you know, his knee is working harder, and there's a lot more weight there because he's got a heavier boot, some aluminum protection in there, apparently. Like Dionysi added all sorts of extra protection around his boot. And so, yeah, so, but what there was a funny thing that happened after the race, apparently. Rossi had something funny to say about the battle, and he really enjoyed the race, and he said, it was a really great battle with Stoner. Congratulations to him. If it had happened the other way around, he would have surely cried like he did after Laguna Seca in 2008, but this is racing. I'm happy because he was smiling at the end. Ow.
I don't even think it's an ow. I think it's just another showman thing. I think they both did it this weekend.
Because the thing is, that the thing that I was thinking in my head was when Stoner stuck it to Rossi, I was like, oh, Stoner's totally grinning from ear to ear, and he's thinking, hey, Valley, that's racing.
Well, there's no doubt that I think they're both trying to set the stage for Laguna, because it does kind of put together a bit of a repeat, if you will. And, you know, whether or not that actually happens, it certainly builds the show, if you will, up for this coming weekend. And, you know, the remarks were picked up, and I'm guessing no doubt slightly modified. And I kind of just chuckled at the whole thing. I'm like, ah, okay, they're having fun and building press. And it certainly, you know, there was no doubt that there was a fair amount of revenue that was probably lost when Rossi was out. And that's certainly something that nobody wants to see, especially in this current climate when it comes to racing. And so anything they can do to build the drama and pressure is a wise move, not only for the teams, but for the sport as a whole.
It's a very good point. I actually have a friend who thinks that the quote was kind of manufactured, because he said this is a friend of mine who reads all the Italian press and whatever. And he said that he saw the segments that had all the other quotes taken out of it, and he didn't hear that particular one. So, you know,
a manufactured quote in the Italian press.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Yeah, I can't believe it. But anyway, this we read this about this on autosport.com, which, you know, it's a little bit better than some of the other rags.
True.
Obviously.
True.
You know, top guys was Pedrosa, Lorenzo, and Stoner, and then Rossi, Dovizioso. Sorry. We had. Yeah, that's right. Seaman Shelley was sixth.
His best finish?
Yeah, his best finish of the year. He's very happy about it. Nikki Hayden, Ben Spies, Hector Barbera. I think Hector probably wanted to be higher up, but
I think he was going to create a little bit of havoc in race one.
Yeah, because he was up there. Landry, Caparossi, painful. He was 10 seconds behind the Landry.
Indeed.
And he almost got caught by Alex De Angelis, in fact, it looks like. Yeah, because he was only two tenths ahead. Those Suzuki guys are struggling. They're on their fifth engine each, I believe.
They are. And there's whispers of perhaps a compromise from the MSMA, but I'm not going to get into it yet because I like some corrections
about it.
And it would be, in theory, if it's only coming from one portion or tentacle of the organization, then it really doesn't mean anything yet until it's ratified by Dorna or Espleta or whoever actually makes the real end result decisions that allow rules. And we all know that they haven't been bending rules lately, so we'll have to see what actually comes out of it.
That's right. Okay, well, we've got our favorite race coming up, yours and mine.
Indeed, we do. I don't know. I'm kind of... Well, I guess this is kind of a landmark, if you think about it, Jules, because it's been a long time since I've been back to Laguna, hasn't it?
It's been, I think 2006 was the last time you were there, right?
I think it was. And it's supposed to be cool.
I think that I'm looking at the forecast right now. It's partly cloudy, mid-60s.
Yeah, and I've been very, very sure to look at the proper forecast because you cannot trust the Monterey forecast because...
No, I'm looking at the Wonderground.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you can't look at Monterey for Wonderground. You literally have to look at either the golf course or the lake itself, which is usually at the minimum of 4 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer, but it really does look like it's going to be a 2007 or a 2008 or whatever year that was that Michelin got it all wrong and had to take slicks and cut them down by hand. You remember that?
Yes, of course. Of course, because I remember I was in turn six taking photos, and I was like, man, what is up with the Repsol bikes?
Yeah.
You know?
That was, I guess that was 2008, but that pretty much precipitated the single tire rule, that and Sachsenring.
Yeah.
And so,
and Brno, actually.
Yeah, and Brno, too. And so you and I are heading out there. I'm heading down tomorrow on an 83-foot limo, diesel limo.
Are you going to talk about it now?
I can briefly. I'm catching a ride down with Barry Gilson and Celtic Racing and a couple of those other folks. My race bike is coming with me. I am not racing it. It is going to Celtic Racing for a trainer. And I will be, which is very cool of them to let me hitchhike. And perhaps I'll get it. Not perhaps. I'll get a talk with Barry before the weekend's over. And we'll get plenty of talks. You know, Jules, I can't find the battery for my digital camera, and I'm so bummed. So I'm coming sans camera.
I can bring. I can give you my S90.
That'd be awesome. Because yeah. I'm really bummed. I'm like, oh man. I'm looking at my room here, and there are like 1,000 boxes stacked to the rafters, and I finally finished all the moving this weekend, and there's something I need in every one of these boxes, and I'm certainly not going to get to it tonight because I'm out of here at 9:30 tomorrow morning, which is, basically about 12 hours away. So, and I'm not fully packed either. How fun is, and I still have to edit the show. Oh, oh boy. Which means that this week's show is going to be a very rough edit.
And it's going to be early.
It's going to be way early. Okay, so a reminder on the meetup, folks. And
well, hang on. Before that, I really, you know, we've been talking about the Rossi Ducati rumors. We can't pass up the most ridiculous rumor that we've heard so far yet, which is that it's such a done deal, apparently. Some press is saying that there's been now a gentleman's agreement to allow Rossi to race, to test the GP10 at Valencia after the race. They traditionally have testing the day after. They're going to let him test the Ducati GP10 if he doesn't announce leaving for Ducati for another few rounds. That's apparently the agreement.
It's happened in the past.
Oh yeah, I know. It's amazing. Like the way we're finding out about this Rossi Ducati deal. I mean, it's like, okay, so they're not announcing it, but they're leaking. There's enough people talking about it. There's a leak about this kind of an agreement. I mean, you know, the only thing that's really missing is the signature, really, you know, which is why they can't do it, which is why they can't go out and announce it.
Or the signature that we haven't seen on a piece of paper that already exists somewhere. Dude, the MotoGP lifeboat sprang a billion leaks and sank about, I don't know, 40 years ago. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff coming out. It's, you know, I'm one of those people that, like, tries not to latch on to rumors. They're fun, and I've been down this path before. You guys know I don't like to do a whole bunch of speculation, at least not on the show. But from everything I've heard, it's a done deal. But until somebody reliable and says that it's really a done deal, then a lot of this peripheral stuff, you're just like, oh, okay. You know, where's that coming from? Who knows?
Exactly.
But I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a done deal, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
So, yes, meet and greet reminder, Saturday noon, turn four grandstands, the road behind turn four grandstands. We'll just stand along the road. I'm going to have like a ridiculous like photographer's hat on and
I'll be tall, old, gray hair, which he needs a haircut and skinny. And I will have a small selection of stickers with me. And so you can get yourself a MotoGP OD sticker.
Sweet. Well, Jim, have a great time in the you know, riding with those guys. You should probably interview the one of the drivers, a la Mark Neal in Faster, you know?
Well, that's the plan, because Barry is the driver.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, I got a call today to confirm, and they were crossing over into Wyoming, and we were trying to figure out the logistics of when they would get here. I'm supposed to get a call in the morning from when they hit Reno, and then I'm going to swing over to Sacramento from my current location and get the bike all prepped. We'll load that in and then head to the track. I should be there by tomorrow afternoon.
Awesome. All right. And I'll be there on Friday morning early, and I'll catch you then.
Okay. You got my phone number. Give me a holler.
All right.
All right, man. Cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Take care. We'll see you. Those of you who come out to Laguna Seca, we'll see you there. And then the rest of you, we'll talk to you next week.
Right on.
Ciao.
Ciao.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.